Okay, folks, you should have your Bibles open to Romans chapter 8, although bear in mind that we are in Romans 12:12, and this should be the last time we discuss answering the question of why Romans 12:12 would be the information that we would now need in our fourth component of wisdom from our Father. And that verse very simply says, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer. And those three clauses being the three aspects of the godliness, the thinking, the living, and the labor, it's very critical that we are honest with the context in which that sits. And just because we have the word hope coming up there, and even though it's right for us to go back and say, okay, I learned about my first foundational hope doctrine was developed in me in Romans 8, 16 through 25. Good. That's where your mind needs to start. It's not where it's going to end, but that's where it starts. Going back there, and we did a review, a fairly good review on that on last Wednesday night. But this morning, I'm trying to show you that to answer the question, that's really kind of the what. That's the what that we're talking about when it talks about what hope. Well, the hope that began right there, because God began developing a very powerful doctrine of hope. One of the three greatest, most powerful things that could ever operate in a human heart is hope. And therefore, that's a critical doctrine to get underway. But when it does get underway, it gets underway by confronting the issue of the sufferings of this present time and that hope that is fixed in us of our Father's grand cause for adopting us, the business that He gives us an understanding of there from verses 17 and on down through verse 23. All of that is designed to be so huge and loom so large and so grand in us that we can handle any of the sufferings of this present time with intelligent sonship understanding and appreciation of it, and therefore not be victimized by becoming distressed or despondent or discouraged or miserable or especially depressed. But those things are handled properly with sonship, a sonship attitude with that hope firmly fixed. With that clear, we understand and appreciate, therefore, that that's not, the sufferings of this present time is not what's being addressed in Romans 12. But hope had to start somewhere, and that's where it started. Romans 12:12 is an expansion of that hope doctrine. And therefore, with that being clear, we can now come along and get to what I kind of think of as the core element to answer the question. It's got to be answered. For why is verse 12 in Romans 12 the next natural thing to be said? Because, and the reason you need this is because this is where you're going to get to the core of your exhortation to get it. But why is it the natural thing, the next thing that has to be said, and to get the proper exhortation as a son would need to get the effectual working of verse 12, not just pass it by as easy to understand terminology and it's no big deal. It is a big deal. It's transforming you by the renewing of your mind. So the bottom line is, okay, our initial foundational hope doctrine, which was what I tried to illustrate up here, dealt with handling the sufferings of this present time. And you know that God isn't going to alter them. He's not going to manipulate them. He's not going to use His omnipotent hand in association with them. But these are things that even unbelievers go through. Illness, sickness, disease, disaster, crime, on and on and on and on. Everybody, believer and unbeliever, believer, unbeliever, and sons, all experience those. But that's not where you are in Romans 12:12. Romans 12:12 is not dealing with the sufferings of this present time primarily. Not at all. It's not that it's not in view, because that's where the hope doctrine all began. To have hope, that hope doctrine your Father wants you to have, you've got to have that. But Romans 12:12 isn't primarily dealing with the sufferings of this present time. It's taking that foundational hope doctrine and expanding it into the realm of our sonship life. That verse 12 is addressing in its context. It's expanding it into the realm that it touches upon. Again, it's not a rehash. Verse 12 of Romans 12 isn't a rehash, a restatement of what we learned in Romans 8:16 through 25. However, with that said, it's right and it's proper that we went back to Romans 8:16 through 25 to remind ourselves of our initial hope doctrine in order to prepare us for the expansion of that hope into our thinking and living and labor of the fourth component of our wisdom. Because the hope we deal with in verse 12 is going to come from that. With that grand attitude and fixation of our mind of the perspective and objective of our Father and what He holds out for us as sons. So here now in Rome, I don't know if you can flip back and forth or just think of it in your mind, but in Romans 12:12, we're not dealing with the sufferings of this present time. Something else comes up in Romans 12:12. Something other than, something further than the sufferings of this present time confronts us so that it makes it so that we are now given and it's needful and necessary for us to be given the fourth component of our wisdom and given that as a focused three aspect of godliness breakdown of that original hope doctrine. That wasn't broken down into the three aspects of godliness at all. But this one is. And it's to complement it. It's not only to complement it, it's to be attached to it. But it's to be expanded from it into a full-blown godliness issue that has all three aspects of godliness to it, thinking and living and labor. More so than what was given to us back there in Romans 8:16 through 25. In other words, that establishment-type hope, that's what this is. This is establishment-type hope, necessary and needful for us to even get started on the right foot as sons, now has a need to be moved out of its establishment parameters and to be put someplace else. And that someplace else is now in the very road of the curriculum that we are on. And God actually designed the doctrine of hope to do that. It's like the doctrine of love. God never designed the doctrine of love to have one or two things attached to it and it just sits there. No, as you read through Paul's epistles, it grows and expands and gets more powerful and more wonderful all the way down through it. And hope, since God is, that's one of God's own appellatives, that He is the God of hope, just as He's the God of love. God designed the doctrine of hope to move, to have need to expand its parameters and go from its establishment parameters into somewhere else. He never designed and planned for the hope of Romans 8:16 through 25 just to sit there in Romans 8:16 through 25. It's kind of like God says, He comes along at verse 12 now in Romans 12:12 and He says, remember that hope back there in Romans 8? Well, now that you've actually, here's the critical issue. Now that you've actually begun the curriculum and your sonship education is underway, it's now going to have this, remember this hope doctrine back here? That thing is now going to have daily usefulness to you in a more expansive way than it ever has before. More than just being able to handle the sufferings of this present time. It's like He says, son, I don't know if you knew this or not, but what we began with your hope being built back there and being established back there, that's just, you haven't even cracked the door open onto where that's going to go. That's just the beginning. And that's a marvelous thing. But that's the Father's just basically telling us, well, more than just being able to handle it in the issue of the sufferings of this present time, you're going to be able to handle something else that's going to be built on that hope doctrine that gives you even greater hope that's going to give you a power and ability and a capacity to use my wisdom in how you handle something else that you now are going to confront. You're not going to avoid it when you strike out into this world with my wisdom and you get outside the friendly confines of Wrigley Field, of the local assembly, and you're actually out there in the world at large. So you don't encounter it, though, until you get to the fourth component of our wisdom. Well, if that clicks, hopefully it does, the thing to do now is, again, remind ourselves of the progressive development, the sense and sequence of the curriculum as we've gotten underway with it in Romans 12 and verses 3 all the way down through verse 11. We'll do this very quickly and fill this in on the other side. Phase 2 of level 1 of sonship education is acquiring the sonship decision-making skills of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. Those are the four that you're going to need for the rest of your life and for eternity. Those are going to even be further developed, but those are the four basic decision-making skills you're going to need. And those occur, of course, as we know that we are going to be receiving the instruction of wisdom. And that's going to take place from Romans 12, 3 through 16. We have gotten three of those components under our belts. The issue of godly selfless love, that godly love is not only selfless, but it is kind, so we now have loving kindness. And for the first time after those first two components, we take that loving kindness, we take the wisdom that comes from that love, the being able to discern and value and to esteem things, and we're now going to move it into the business world, our workaday life. There's your kind of sense and sequence. So the godly wisdom that comes from the godly selfless loving kindness starts off inside the realm of your local assembly, and then that wisdom moves out into your job, into your workaday world, and folks, that puts you into the world at large. And this fourth component, as I said before, you have them kind of in couplets of 2, 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, 2, 2 and 2. The fourth component comes along here, and it still has you in the world at large. The fourth component is going to take that wisdom, and now you're going to apply it to the rather general and common situations and circumstances that you're going to come up with. These aren't don't misunderstand. When I talk about common here, I'm not talking about the sufferings that are common to all men. That's not what this is. This is the common circumstances and situations of a son in his sonship life using the curriculum. That's a big difference from that. It's not unattached to it because it starts here, but this is the advance on it. Folks, you're not going past Woolworths anymore. When I was in Chicago, I used to love to go by, I don't know what they call it. They call it something like the Million Dollar Mile or something like that. It's where all the department stores are there on I can't think of the name of the street. My mind is so full of other things. Michigan Avenue. Yeah, that's where I lived. I ought to know. But you go downtown and you'd window shop at Carson Perry Scott's or at Lyon and Healy or some of the other big department stores in downtown. You see the little kids at Christmas time, they got their faces up against it like this looking in. That's not us anymore. That was us for a long time. That was us when we were going through Romans 8. But once we got into verse 3 of chapter 12, we're now inside the classroom. We're now actually doing the job. You've had three areas where you should know that the living words, the living God, have been written on the tables of your heart, because those first three components all have a labor that has to do with you working with your Father to meet an objective that He has. So you ought to be with that loving, that selfless love, operating in an office in the local assembly of some kind. There's one for everybody in this church. In the second one, you should be treating one another with loving kindness, in that you, in honor, prefer one another. And you're bestowing honor upon one another because of the way you value yourselves now as members of one body and members one of another. And in your business world, You're not slothful in business, but you're fervent in spirit and you're serving the Lord in it. Ask yourself, is that how you spent your week at your job? Well, what I'm saying is that now has put you into a position where the next necessary thing to have said is what's said in the fourth component. And that puts you, again, out in the world, and the fourth component still has you out in the world because that's where you're going to encounter a tribulation, more common than not. The tribulation that Romans 12:12 is after. When it says, rejoicing in hope, why? If that's the way I'm thinking, why do I need that thinking? Patient in tribulation. But the tribulation is not talking about this, the sufferings of this present time. It's talking about something else that you were told about in Romans 8. Romans 12:12 still has you in the world, and that's where you're going to more often than not encounter this kind of tribulation. Now, that's not to say there can't be tribulation among saints in a local assembly. There can, but you're never going to be able to handle that until you can handle it among unjustified men that you encounter and some of the things you're going to encounter in the world. But that's not sufficient enough. Just knowing that much still isn't sufficient enough to answer our why question. Why does our Father have the fourth component to our wisdom as stated to us in verse 12? In other words, to simply come along and say, well, it's because now that we're using godly wisdom out in the world in our job, we're naturally going to encounter tribulations out in the world. Well, yes, you are. But Romans 8:16-25 could handle a lot of that. That's why I say it's not sufficient enough to just say it that way. It has to be Romans 12:12, the tribulation it's going after is something more specific than that. It makes it so that it's natural for verse 12 to deal what it deals with to be in the fourth position of our instruction of wisdom. Well, this is where let's make sure that we're on the same page. Come over to Romans 12 and look at verse 12 once again. Let me put it up on the board. I think it's this one. Yeah, we'll do it this way because this is the threefold breakdown of the godliness of verse 12. All right, we'll just take my scribbles off of there. One of the things that's going to help you out in this little verse is to pay attention to the exactitude, even though these are all real simple little words, but the exactitude of the prepositions are going to be a good clue to us of what's going on here, what's being driven at. The prepositions in that aspect that deals with our godly conduct and behavior, the living right here, this one here, when he says patient in tribulation. I mentioned this before just in passing, but now we need to kind of focus in on it. When Paul says rejoicing in hope, patient, they're all three in. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, but especially dealing with the godly living, the conduct and behavior, you're to be patient in tribulation. It does not say that you are patient with tribulation. That means something entirely different. And when you're patient, put it this way, when you're patient with somebody, what are you actually doing with them?
Tolerating.
You're tolerating them. You're just putting up with them. You know, you just stand there and patiently, okay. Yeah, that's the issue of coping. That's the issue of putting up with, the issue of tolerating someone or something. That's not what this is talking about. Being patient in tribulation tells you that this is going after something more than coping. This is one of the fallacies of modern day psychiatry and sociology and this kind of thing, and especially even in a lot of the modern public day schools that want to try to give children or give people coping mechanisms. Your Father isn't interested in you just simply coping with something. And this is not giving you a prescription for a spiritual pill that you take to be able to cope was some bad thing that happens to you. Otherwise, he would use with instead of in. He says to be patient in it. This is going after more than just coping, more than just handling, more than just enduring. You are going to be able to do all that, especially endure the tribulation. But in tells you, if you're patient with somebody and they're just yammering away at you or something like that, and you're just being patient with them, what's in the back of your mind? This is going to end soon, and the sooner it ends, the better. That is why the critical difference here in that little preposition is so important, because that's not the way a son thinks about this kind of tribulation. He's not in a tribulation where he's just going to gut it out, grit his teeth. I like that that maneuver that, you know, when you go through stress in a jet or some of the jet fighters, they have to learn how to strain as they pull 4, 5, 6 G's. That they have to wear body suits that keep the blood up into their chest so that they don't pass out. But that's not even enough. They have to strain, and it's like you're straining to go to the bathroom. And if you ever see like the Blue Angels or something, they've got the video on in the cockpit as they go through one. You'll hear them grunting, because they're trying to keep the blood up into their chest cavity and that kind of thing. That's all that is grunting and straining to get to the end of it when finally it's over. That's the way most Christians go through trouble in their lives. Oh, I can't wait till it's over. I'm glad that's over. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to patiently endure this. Endure, okay. And that's over. I'm glad that's over. No, the son comes along and he says, when it comes to this particular kind of a tribulation that is mine because I'm actually utilizing my Father's wisdom in this world and I get trouble coming my way, I'm going to not only use the godly thinking of rejoicing in the hope that's an expansion of that hope doctrine I first started with, but I'm going to be patient in the tribulation. I'm not going to grit my teeth and gut it out and grunt it out until it's over. I was told something when I was established as my Father's son that makes it so that I see value in the tribulation itself. And there's worth in it and benefit in it for me as a son. Well, let me give you another hint that's down here in the laboring with God aspect. That there's something more in view here than merely coping, merely handling, or merely enduring the tribulation of the third aspect of godliness here. Here in the labor aspect of it, once again, continuing instant in prayer. Paul doesn't come along and say, aha, prayer. You don't know anything about that, do you? No, he doesn't. It's said to you here, it's not that you didn't already know what sonship prayer is yet. You do. You went over some information about it. This is actually assuming you do know how to intelligently pray as a son. Assuming that Romans 8, and what verses? Go back and look at it. Where were you made aware of it? Verses what? 26 and 27. I know this is a little silly to say it this way, but that's two verses past verse 25. That's the second of the three components that made up your sonship establishment. And so, when you realize that continuing instant in prayer assumes that you know sonship prayer, that Romans 8, 26 and 7 has done their job, this is now telling you, all right, you're to continue instant. There is when this happens, there is to be an instant laboring with your Father in connection with that tribulation. And it has to do with communing and fellowshipping with Him in some intelligent sonship prayer. That's because of an operation he wants to get accomplished that you should know about and should be made aware of, that's actually sitting back in the format for sonship education back in the book of Proverbs. I'll give you a hint. What do we do at the end of every component? We go through the positive and proper response. Do you remember where those are, that's found in Proverbs? 3:1-4. When you go home between now and next time we meet on Wednesday, read the two verses underneath that. You'll start to understand a little bit about what your father's operation and all this is about. Well, anyway, there's something that hope implies. Let me put it that way. If you have hope in me, what does it imply? Trust. And when you go back and you read the next two verses under Proverbs 3:4, you'll see that trust. Well, anyway, that's what I mean when I say there's an operation of God that he wants to engage in. He wants us to engage with him in. Whenever a tribulation situation occurs in our lives, he wants us to engage in this operation with him. And it's an operation that goes beyond just applying this over here, Romans 8:16-25, to the situation. It's not going to take that. That's a situation that even the unbeliever is in. This is a situation that only a son is in. A son who has those three components working in him now demands that this fourth one is going to have to be used. It now comes into play. And that'll make it so that in your conduct and behavior, you're not going to just be patient with the tribulation, grit it out, gut it out, have enough personal sinew to be able to just suck it up until it's over. But you're going to be patient in the tribulation. In other words, you're going to face the reason he starts out there with the issue of rejoicing in hope. Man, oh man, if you were to put your hand over the rest of that verse and just have rejoicing in hope, well, you would think that we were all going to a revival service or a big old church service or a big praise and worship service, or there's going to be a lot of singing and choirs, and we're going to be rejoicing, rejoicing, rejoicing. It's almost like a festive atmosphere. Rejoicing in hope. Stop the verse. We'll stop it right there. Yeah, but your conduct and behavior, the way you're going to live that rejoicing in hope, is by being patient in tribulation. Sometimes you just want to even whisper that word. But a son doesn't. The son says, patient in tribulation. That's what's coming my way. Bring it on. Because I know, and that's not just some, you know, personal human bravado from somebody who's in a nice, safe environment. It's almost like if you're fighting a war, there's a lot of people who can talk about going to war who've never picked up a weapon, never stood a post, and never heard a shot fired at them in anger. But the truth of the matter is, as a son, you're going to face tribulation. If you're going to be facing it rejoicing in hope, what are you facing it with? Expectation. You're facing that tribulation with a particular expectation. You expect something is going to happen. You have expectation. And that's why your conduct and behavior is going to be one of not running away from it. Not falling apart. Not flying in 1,000 different directions. But being patient in it. That's to be the conduct. That's to be your behavior. As you have rejoicing in hope. And that hope doctrine expanded and now operating in your thinking, to be patient in the tribulation and then labor with your Father by continuing instant in prayer, in communion and fellowship with him, to accomplish what he wants to get accomplished in you as his son. that he could not get accomplished any other way unless you were in that situation. And by the way, those are going to be common. Tribulation, that's going to be common. That's ordinary. That's what we'll face as sons living in this world with our Father's wisdom. If you want to get along in the world, don't come here. Don't get this information, because you're not going to be able to get along with this world system. The adversary created it. He developed it. And it can pretty easily accommodate most of Christianity without too much fluff and any fol-de-rol. It's a good word. But the one thing it absolutely, it's like I was listening to the sportscasters very briefly talk about they had, for the Super Bowl, they had media day, right? And somebody said, where is Tom Brady? And as one reporter said, I always know where Brady is because I can never see him. There's always a crowd around him. And wherever that big crowd is going, I know that Brady's in the middle of that. Cindy and I once snuck in, we did, I'll admit it, we snuck in to Gasoline Alley at the Indianapolis 500. Some of you don't know what Gasoline Alley is. It's all the garages where all the drivers are and all their cars. And there was this huge crowd that was going through, and I grabbed her and we were there, and I said, we didn't have a pass, and I said, just act like you know what you're doing. Just act like you're with them. And we just walked right in there. I had the best time. I got to meet all these drivers, and I was getting pictures and autographs and all this kind of thing. Jim McKay was there from ABC, Wide World of Sports. And I learned something. Wherever that guy goes, there's going to be a driver come out because there's always a crowd. There's always that crowd there. And the reason I'm going into all of this is the way the world system operates, the way the adversary designed it, is that if you're just an ordinary Christian, you can get along and nobody crowds around you. But as soon as a son, you take any environment like that, that sports environment or at the Indianapolis 500, you had at that time one of the leading drivers at that time was Rick Mears. If Rick Mears walked out, that whole crowd knew somebody big was there. That's the way the adversary's got this world system designed. If you're just an average ordinary Christian or an unbeliever, it won't even take notice. But it can detect a son with that kind of wisdom. And it has built into it mechanisms to resist it. I almost used an illustration. It came to mind like a cancer cell or a white blood cell or whatever these. But I got so screwed up in my own thinking about it that I thought I'd never be able to state it right. But if there's a bad blood cell, then there's good blood cells that come around and fight it. I saw it once on TV, but I can't remember it all. This world system is built and designed that way so that it naturally is going to start to produce trouble when godly wisdom is being utilized and operated on like sons are to operate with it. And so all I'm saying in that little jaunt there was probably not worth going down, is that as a son, you're going to face the tribulation with expectation. You're not going to be running away from it, but it's the determination for you to be patient in it and to labor together with God in a very particular way for the success of an operation that he has to be accomplished, not with the tribulation, but in it. Being patient in it. So with all of that said, to adequately and properly answer that question that that's been dogging us for the last few Bible classes, why is this the next natural thing for us to have said to us? Oh, and by the way, let me go back to this. Like I say, I guess I'd show you the rest of this. You've got the sufferings of this present time dealt with properly handled by the hope doctrine that was foundational in Sonship Establishment, and we were experiencing that. Even when we learned that, we were in it, we were experiencing it, we still do to this day. But what this fourth component is talking about, tribulation-wise, we didn't experience back here in our Sonship Establishment. We only experienced this as sons who are in the curriculum, who have taken the loving kindness that we have out into the world environment, utilized in our business world, and now in the remaining areas of the life of our world, we're still out in the world. That demands and calls for that hope doctrine to be expanded. That's what that's supposed to represent, expanding that hope doctrine, so that we rejoice in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer. And that's the way that's understood. It's properly, that's the proper development of it. You first get it fundamentally, then it expands. And folks, when we get into level 3 sonship, this thing is going to be an enormous big thing, because it's going to expand even further. With all that said, now, to adequately and properly answer the question, why is this the next natural thing for a father to give us his wise sonship decision-making skills there in Romans 12:12? Well, come back to Romans chapter 8 if you're not already there and look at the chapter. It means, if that's properly understood and that makes sense, that clicks, it means there's something else sitting in Romans 8 that makes us aware of the fact that once sonship education got itself underway, we were going to be expected to take our hope from Romans 8, 16 through 25 and utilize it by expanding it in a very particular manner. And verse 12 is dealing with that particular manner. It's giving us the godly thinking and the godly conduct and behavior and the godly labor that we're to have in view of that expectation, expecting that to happen. So really, even though I make no apologies, and it was necessary and it was right to go back and do a little review of our hope doctrine there in 16 through 25 of chapter 8, we actually can rule out finding the answer for why this component, verse 12 of Romans 12, is necessary. We can rule that out almost. We're not going to be looking anywhere in verses 16 through 25 for our answer. We can rule that out. We can rule out finding our answer in verses 26 and 27. Because the issue of sonship prayer is mentioned there. So that really only leaves one other section to the chapter to look at. What does it leave you? 28 through 39. The third and biggest component of your sonship establishment. And that's where we'll find the key to answering this why question, as well as the key to handling Romans 12:12 properly, with the proper viewpoint, proper frame of reference, and certainly in the proper context. All right? So we're in the right section, verses 28 through 39, and it's critical to recognize that the hope doctrine that you were taught initially in Romans 8, 16 through 25 was designed to go to work, go into operation right away, immediately, as part of your sonship establishment. But is that true for everything you've got in Romans 8, 28 through 39? No. You were made very clear. It was made very clear to you, and you were made very much aware that some of the things you were told, if not nearly everything you were told, from Romans 8, 28 down through 39, wouldn't really, how would we say it, click in, kick in, come into play in sonship establishment when you were on the outside of the window just looking in. Remember how often I would tell you that? If I told you that once, I told you 100 times. When we went through those passages down through that section, even though this is critical for your establishment because it established you with the right attitudes that you're to have, What was one of the major things your father wanted you to have an attitude about in verses 28 through 39? Well, look at verse 28. We know that all things work together for good. Work together with what? The curriculum. What was it that your father wanted to instill a kind of attitude? What was the attitude about? The curriculum. It was to get you to see how trustworthy it was, how much thought he went into it, how he link by link and yard by yard put the chains of provision together so that everything you would ever learn, so that he could instill in you as a son before you even took the cellophane off your book on the first day of class, that you would have absolute confidence in that curriculum because you have absolute assurance and confidence in the one who wrote it. You trust your father more implicitly than any person you'll ever know, and that curriculum that he put in your hand can be trusted to the nth degree, no matter if every single part of your physical being and your environment around you says otherwise. If the words on the page say it, that's the truth. That's the reality of the matter. And so that's one of the main reasons why he had to confront those things. But they were in a preliminary way. That's what establishment does. It gets you established to now go out and do something. And one of the things that you were told repeatedly, and I told you repeatedly through here, is that the things that you go over there are things that will really come into play when you are actually in the curriculum. Well, folks, the day's arrived. We're actually in it. We're there. We're here. And we're ready now to grab something that was told to us back here and now put it into effect. In a real way, not just in theory, not just in concept, but now in reality. That information there is designed to have you recognize that its full-blownness or full-blown function, full-blown operation won't get realized until you get underway with the actual sonship curriculum from Romans 12, 3 and following. Now, with that said, and giving you a little bit more time to think about it, can you zero in on where that would specifically be addressed? You're right. Like I said, I would expect everybody to get it because it's probably been very apparent to you, but I just had to get there. Come down. Again, as you've gone through the setting forth of Romans 8:28 and the powerful thing that's going to be to you, the proof that it works by verses 29 and 30. Remember that from verse 31 to the end of the chapter, everything is said back to that issue of Romans 8:28 through 30. What shall we, verse 31, then say to these things, the things he just enumerated in verses 28, 29, and 30? And this is where, as I said on Wednesday night, God did his open heart surgery upon you, and we went through five probing questions that dug down to the very nth degree of your heart and dug up and rooted up all of the things that could possibly trip you up when it comes to just having human bravado and human zeal and human enthusiasm any of that junk that won't last through any kind of real trouble or real persecution coming upon you. And you were taught about the enemies that you were going to face that were going to oppose you. You being your own worst enemy twice over. But then you come down to verse 35, as Katie said, and you're confronted with that final question, that final who question. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? And as we saw back then, I'll put it back up here for you again, the love of Christ, and later on as the chapter ends, the love of God is not my love for Christ. It's not Christ's love for me. That's already been established and it is never going to be challenged. And I could never be separated from it. That's already a reality in me. It's not my love for God or God's love for me. That's already been established and will never be something that I would even doubt for a moment. I could not be separated from that. That's not what this is talking about. The love of Christ, as well as later on at the end of the chapter, the love of God in Romans chapter 8 there, is the love that the Lord Jesus Christ himself has for his own sonship life, the living out of that sonship life, achieving all of its aims, all of its goals, and all of its objectives. And when the Spirit of adoption, the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit, utilizing the information contained in Romans chapter 8 and verses 14 all the way down through verse 30, just prior to these five probing questions and starting, if all that has effectually produced in my heart, what that's supposed to produce by the time you hit the end of verse 30, you are now to have in your possession, you're to have produced in your heart an equivalent measure of love for your sonship life, your sonship status, living of it out to its aims, goals, and objectives, exactly on the level that Christ himself has it, and that God your Heavenly Father has it, and it can therefore be said of you too that you and I have the love of Christ. And it's that a determined, open, known adversary has declared his opposition against that and has the means, and a lot of means, by which he can try to separate you from that. And thereby he can succeed in trying to thwart God's retaking of the heavenly places and repossessing them and reconciling them back unto himself. Because the repossession of the heavenly places and its governing and its rulership to God's honor and glory is not vested in just the ordinary Christian. It's vested in sons who know what they're doing. And then as you go down through all of those things, that love of Christ, he says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? And then he's going to look into the arsenal of the adversary. And this is dealing with our other enemy than ourselves. This is dealing with a sworn, declared adversary to us as sons. Satan himself, his policy of evil, his whole course that he has charted for this world. And within all of that, he gives us seven looks into the quill of the adversary to see the armament, the darts, the arrows that he has in there. And what's the first one? Tribulation. There's the tribulation that matches Romans 12:12. And therefore the hope doctrine has to be and demands to be expanded from just dealing with the sufferings of this present time into dealing with now a hope of how you as a son have an expectation to be patient in tribulation and not long to get out of it. Now, believe me, let's not get into Kookville once again. I'm not saying that if you whack your thumb with a hammer, that's a tribulation, you're just going to sit there and watch it bleed. I'm talking about that you have now begun to operate with your Father's wisdom. And somewhere along the line, you're going to express something either verbally or you're going to do something yourself. As you apply your Father's wisdom in the world, in your workaday life and in the world environment, that is going to get the attention. It's like that celebrity, like that sports figure that all he has to do is walk onto the field and he attracts attention. You're now going to start to be an attractant to some particular tribulations that I don't think anybody in here has really yet experienced to the degree you're going to. But those particular kind of tribulations associated with sonship living in the world environment is what's being addressed back here when your Father starts to talk about it in that fifth and final probing question. And folks, that's why the fifth and final probing question is the lengthiest and has the most information contained in it, why it comes last, and why it results in the full persuasion of mind. And in one sense, I'm not saying that what we learned back there was just theory. It wasn't. Because what's supposed to happen in verse 35 of Romans 8 is that you are actually in a virtual reality of experiencing and thinking about what it's like to experience tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword. Not just because you're a Christian, but because you are applying as a son the curriculum of your sonship education. And so that takes it out of the realm of being theory, but there is something to be said for it actually being experienced. And now it's going to be. And when it is, we can look back to here and we can remind ourselves, even though the word hope isn't used down through here, that's exactly what was being done. This hope doctrine that began here is now going to be expanded upon. And this is where actually the godly remedy for verse 35 gives you the perspective of the hope in the tribulation. And perhaps next time what we need to do is remind ourselves of that just a little bit. In verse 36 he says, the godly remedy, for as it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. That's the key. Nay, in all these things, we are more than conquerors. There's your expectation in tribulation. There's what keeps you patient in it. Because you're applying the more than conqueror issue. Through him that loved us, for I'm persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. I told you, there's going to come a time when we're going to take what we learned back here, and it's going to be the rubber now meets the road. Well, that's what the fourth component is dealing with. Because your Father knew, as soon as you took his wisdom out from the friendly confines of the local assembly into the environment that the adversary has charted. And again, believe me when I tell you, tribulation, even though it sounds bad and everything, and it's uncomfortable, it's mild by comparison. It really is. We're not talking about you being beaten and persecuted and jailed and all these kinds of things. We're just talking about you try to live that way here, you're going to have a little bit of trouble doing it. You try to say those things in this environment, it isn't going to go down without somebody saying something back or behind your back or whatever. But there's a certain modicum of trouble that you're going to experience because the wisdom of the Father is not compatible with the wisdom of the world. It's just not. It's not that you as a son are going out there looking for it, making trouble. You're not a troublemaker. It's simply, humbly living out your Father's wisdom in a hostile environment. And somewhere, it may not be every day, it may be sporadic at first, and it may be very mild, but there's going to be some tribulation come your way. And you have to learn to experience being patient in that before you can ever handle persecution, famine, nakedness, peril, sword. And really, that's all. The adversary isn't really personally involved in it. It's just unleashing you in the environment he charted and he formed, and it has its own built-in opposition. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but does that make sense now? Do we see that subtle difference? And we can really, with some good confidence now, say we know why that Romans 12:12 is said the way it's said and why it's in that fourth position. And really, your exhortation comes from that. Because you're exhorted as a son. Son, this is why you need this now. And going back to Romans 8, that's going to be your map, folks. That's going to be your roadmap for so much in your sonship life. And going back to it and saying, yep, I was made aware of it. I was given a heads up that that's what was going to happen once I entered the curriculum. And sure enough, this is where it comes into play the first time. And that should be a great exhortation to you to take very serious every one of those simple 10 words that are contained in Romans 12:12. Well, we'll leave it at that and get just a few little things tied up that way. Like I said, the bulk of the work that we're going to do is getting to the verse. The actual work in the verse is going to be rather brief by comparison. And then we'll move on to the fifth component. So I appreciate your indulgence and time on all of this, but I feel good that we've now got it clearly stated and can answer that question with confidence as to why it's there. All right, we'll stop right there and we'll pick it up then on